Welcome to Creating Wealth with Jason Hartman. During this program, Jason is going to tell you some really exciting things that you probably haven't thought of before, and a new slant on investing. Fresh new approaches to America's best investment that will enable you to create more wealth and happiness than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine, self-made multimillionaire who not only talks the talk, but walks the walk. He's been a successful investor for 20 years and currently owns properties in 11 states and 17 cities. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to financial freedom. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, and this is episode number 183. Boy, we're sliding toward episode number 200 quickly, aren't we? Hope you've enjoyed the last few shows, and we've got a lot more great shows coming up for you as well. Today, we're going to talk with the Senior Vice President and the spokesperson for RealtyTrack. You've probably heard of RealtyTrack. They're the largest website for foreclosure information nationwide. So I think you'll find this show to be very enlightening. Before we get to the interview with Rick on RealtyTrack. First of all, I want to say that a lot of you have been sending me articles lately, and I really appreciate them. Doug, Corey, other people as well, other listeners, appreciate it when you send us articles or give us feedback at jasonhartman.com/feedback. And one of the things I've really been noticing is what a bright future landlords have. Now, for the uninformed investor, it would seem that investors don't have a good future, but I actually read that the opposite way. There have been some articles recently that have run saying that homeownership rates will be down for years to come and owning your own home is not so much the American dream as it used to be and all of this kind of stuff. And folks, read between the lines when you read that stuff. That means that landlords have a bright future. In fact, I was talking with Doug yesterday and he was saying, and I think rightly so, he was saying that one of the biggest assets for employment opportunities and business opportunities in the future will be mobility. And who has mobility? Renters have mobility. Homeowners do not have that kind of mobility. And I'll tell you firsthand from my own experience, I'm trying to sell my house in Orange County right now. And it has not been easy. It's not sold yet. I would like to move. And I don't have the mobility I wish I had renting a place. So that is a good thing for investors because we love a transient population. Now, when I say transient, I don't mean people moving in and out every week. I mean a population where they might come to our town where we own investment property. Maybe they come to Dallas, Houston, Austin, Atlanta, Indianapolis for a year or 2 years, and they've got a career opportunity with, if it's in Indianapolis, it might be Eli Lilly. If it's in Houston, it's with one of the oil companies or the hospitals. And this kind of mobility we can offer to our renters as a good service, and in return, they're going to give us phenomenal returns on our investments. So when you hear that homeownership rates are down, be happy. That is wonderful news for investors. The thing that you should be scared of, if you ever hear this headline, if you ever read this headline in any of the media or you hear this on TV, that the population is declining, then you should be concerned. But if the population of homeowners is declining, while the general population is still increasing as it is, be happy. That's just more customers for your rental properties. So that's really good news. I think landlords have an excellent, excellent future ahead of them. And I'm purchasing 3 properties right now for that very reason. I mean, interest rates are the lowest they've been in recorded history. Prices are down in many of these markets. The opportunities are nothing short of phenomenal. So anyway, keep that in mind. Call us. Remember, we have properties in 43 markets nationwide. And there's a lot of great opportunities out there right now. Hey, we just did a special promotion for our text club members, and it was for 50% off any of our products at jasonhartman.com. So I've urged you to join the text club. I know a lot of you have, and we appreciate you joining. And if you have not done so yet, from your cell phone, just text the keyword Jason, my name Jason, and space your first name, space your email address to 411-247, 411-247. 24/7. Text that information to that number from your cell phone. You'll be entered in the text club and you'll have some phenomenal special promotions. The Masters Weekend Preview Call is coming up on September 23rd. That's totally free. Register at jasonhartman.com. And we have got a phenomenal Masters Weekend and Creating Wealth Bootcamp coming up for you in October. Be sure you join us for that. That will be well worth a trip out to Orange County, California. If you're local, of course, do not miss it. So some phenomenal opportunities there. All right, let's go to the interview. Let's talk about foreclosures. Let's hear from RealtyTrack and kind of get a handle on the foreclosure market nationwide. And remember, we have fantastic foreclosure properties in 43 markets nationwide. So contact our investment counselors at 714-820-4200, or better yet, go to the website jasonhartman.com. You can click on properties. You can look at full performas that are all standardized and benchmarked in many markets nationwide. So we will be right back, and we'll talk to RealtyTrack here in less than 60 seconds.
Want to know what you've missed in the Creating Wealth series? Well, here's your opportunity with Jason's 5-book set. That's shows 1 through 100 through digital download. You save $288 by getting this 5-book set. Learn all of the advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com.
It's my pleasure to welcome Rick Sharga to the show. He is the Senior Vice President with RealtyTrack, and we've been wanting to get a RealtyTrack spokesperson on for a long time, so I'm sure this interview will be a big treat. And RealtyTrack is really the go-to source for foreclosure property information in the United States of America. Rick, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
So what is going on in the world of foreclosures? I would assume you guys are busy nowadays.
Busy is something of an understatement. We tend to be right in the middle of everything going on in the foreclosure market, and foreclosures continue to increase. We just released our July numbers recently, and in July there were over 325,000 homeowners who received a foreclosure notice just during the month. That was up about 4% from June. We're also on a pace to set a new record for the number of bank repossessions in a given year. We had about 93,000 of those in the month of July, and we'll end this year with probably between 1 million and 1.2 million homes having been repossessed.
In the entire country, right?
In the entire country, that's correct.
How many housing units are there in the country, just to get a sort of a per capita or a comparison, a relationship basis there? You said for the year you think we'll end at 1.2 3 million? Was that the number you said?
We'll probably wind up at about 1 to 1.2 million homes being repossessed by the banks.
So those will go through the entire process, and right. The bank will own it and sell it.
And there will be all told, there will be somewhere north of 3 million homes that will receive at least one foreclosure notice over the course of the year.
And does a foreclosure notice, just so people understand the process, is that considered a notice of default?
Yeah, in California, where we're located, the first notice of a foreclosure proceeding is called a notice of default. In some states that practice judicial foreclosures, the same sort of announcement is called a list pendants filing. Some other states have different iterations of that, initial demand notices, things like that. But basically, this means you are formally in default on your mortgage contract, and the clock has started ticking on a process whereby the bank intends to take your property back if you don't cure the default.
So what do you see in terms of maybe the regional aspect? And I don't know how granular you want to get on this, but state by state, I mean, what are the worst states that have the most foreclosures? Or maybe from an investor's perspective, those are the best states because they represent the most opportunity for inventory.
Well, let's take a look at that in a couple different ways. And the fact of the matter is that states with the highest inventory levels of foreclosure properties aren't always necessarily the best places from an investment perspective. And it also depends on your style of investment. If you're a flipper, your investment style is going to be a little bit different than if you're a buy and hold investor who's looking for an apartment or a rental unit to do as a cash flow property.
That's a great point, Rick, because Michigan has a very high foreclosure rate, but I don't know if Michigan has a very bright future. So,
well, you know, we were talking about that at an investor group meeting that I spoke at a couple weeks ago, and you know, you could buy Detroit probably right right now if you really wanted to.
You could buy the whole city, right?
and the question is, what are you going to do with the property once you bought it?
Right.
The state's had a net loss, not just of jobs, but of population over the last 10 years. And if nobody's left to buy the houses, nobody's left to rent the houses, what are you going to do with those great bargains that you just purchased? Las Vegas, another interesting just sort of data point for you. Buying a foreclosure in Las Vegas actually represents less of a discount than many other major markets, even though Las Vegas has the highest per capita rate of foreclosure activity. And it turns out that such a high percentage of homes that are sold in Las Vegas are distressed properties that all the other properties have had to reduce their prices in order to be competitive. So you only save about 10% on average buying a distressed property in Las Vegas compared to what you would pay for a property not in foreclosure. So it's there are some really sort of countervailing trends that go on here. But to get back to your initial question in terms of where most of the activity is, if you look at it in terms of the rates of foreclosure on a sort of per capita basis or you know based on the number of households in an area, Nevada has been the number one state in the union for probably over 2 years running now. And it's followed in close order by Arizona, Florida, California, and Michigan. So those five states have the highest rates of foreclosure activity. So just in the month of July, for example, in Nevada, one out of every 82 households was in foreclosure, you know, which is amazing for a given month. In terms of states that have the highest raw numbers of homes in foreclosure, California by itself has about 21% of the national total. Almost 67,000 properties in California received a foreclosure notice in the month of July. And then four other states plus California get you to about 50% of all the activity. So you have California, Florida, Illinois, Michigan, and Arizona that by themselves account for about 50% of all the foreclosure filings that are issued in a given month.
So, Rick, what's interesting here is that I'm looking on your website, and in California, there are 66,910 foreclosure properties. One in every 200 housing unit has received a foreclosure notice. Is that what that means?
Of some sort during that month. That's correct.
Oh, during that month. Okay. Yep. So that doesn't represent how many will happen in the year or how many will happen in the month. It's just they received a notice in that month.
Yes, sir.
And so what happens here and what might be confusing to investors looking at this data is that they could go into foreclosure, receive the notice, and then cure it, come out of foreclosure, and then drop in again 3 months later, potentially, right?
Yeah, theoretically, they could come in and out of foreclosure multiple times. They could get into a loan modification program. They could cure a default. The bank could develop a forbearance program of some sort. All sorts of ways they could temporarily come out of foreclosure and then go back in. But your other point was valid, too, in that people can get that initial notice of default and in some cases simply cure the default and not be in foreclosure anymore. So that does happen, too, although it's happening with less frequency in today's economy than it does in a more normal market.
Just want to make sure I know what you said there. You're saying they're curing it less often today than in a more stable market, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. All right, good. So there's a lot of data here, Rick. If you sort of want to put it all together for them, are there certain states or cities that you guys have an opinion on as to where the best opportunities to buy and hold properties are?
Well, if you were to take a look at cities across the country that represent what we think might be some of the best opportunities. What we would take a look at is where there's enough inventory of foreclosure properties to make a difference, where the discount on those properties might be significant, where the jobless rates are not off the charts, and where there might be opportunities to do something with the properties once you purchase them. And a lot of these areas are places that are a little bit off the beaten path, at least for a lot of investors who tend to focus on the coastal areas. But there are places like Memphis, Tennessee, which actually we believe has some of the best opportunities to find a foreclosure property that's a bargain but also represents an opportunity for a good ROI.
Now, we've looked at the Memphis market, and it's pretty spotty in Memphis. In terms of the areas, they really vary a lot. So is that more a empirical look, or do you guys do any sort of anecdotal type stuff where you've got people going to markets or you're getting feedback from people in markets, or is it all sort of statistical?
This is statistical. We actually do publish a monthly newsletter that's called the Foreclosure News Report, and in that, we're doing a series of stories right now that basically are feet on the street, and we're talking to investors in local markets about what they're doing in those local markets. And we'll do a state highlight feature every month as well, where we talk to people that are actively buying in those states. So, yeah, the numbers that I'm talking about right now are fairly cut and dried. And certainly in any real estate market, you know, the reason for the cliche still being around that, you know, real estate is really a local market is because it really is a local market.
It varies so much. I mean, you've got on your foreclosure heat map here a market like Las Vegas with a really high foreclosure rate, 1 in 82 homes, and then a market with a really low foreclosure rate is 1 in 10,300 housing units.
Yep.
All real estate is definitely local, right?
And even within those markets, the point you made about Memphis is absolutely true. We're here in Orange County, where we're located, you can look at Orange County numbers, but there's a huge difference between foreclosure activity rates in a place like Newport Beach compared to the county seat in Santa Ana. And, you know, part of it's demographic, part of it is just the way buying activity takes place. A lot more people want to live by the beach. So it is something that a local market investor really needs to pay attention to. What are the trends, not just in the region, but in the part of the region where you're looking to invest your money?
So your site gives potential investors the opportunity to find properties where the seller may be in desperate straits, where they've had a notice of default filed, all the way up until the bank owns the property, has taken it back, and has or is reselling it, right?
That's correct.
So one of the things that we were kind of talking about, just chatting real briefly before we went on the air, is there's so many people, and it's just it never ceases to amaze me. I've been in this business a long time now, and all the people that they watch the late night TV when they can't sleep, those infomercials, and they go to the seminars, and they think that they can just run out to these foreclosure auctions and the world's their oyster and there's deals galore and it's easy to buy them and so forth. And maybe they went to the guy's seminar that teaches them how to do that. But one of the things I don't think they really realize is how professionalized our industry has become, where the people going to these auctions are running real businesses, real companies with resources, with boots on the street, going to look at properties before they go up to sale. They've got software programs. They're using your site. They're comping properties out. They know the neighborhoods. They've done their homework. They've got cash. They've got tremendous resources. What do you find in terms of that? I mean, any feedback there?
Well, as a general rule, if you're a beginning investor, we encourage people to stay away from the courthouse auctions or share sales if that's how your state operates, for a number of reasons. One is that, generally speaking, people that go in there for their first pass really don't understand what they're getting into. The risk-reward quotient is just not very good in today's market. And that's partly because the banks simply aren't discounting the properties at these auctions as much as they used to, because in many cases the properties are already underwater in terms of valuation before they get to the auction. And another, the risk of making a bad purchase decision at these auctions is enormous for a first-timer. You mentioned the fact that the auctions tend to be populated by people who do this for a living. These are folks who smell blood in the water when somebody new comes in, and they really don't want any more competition. So they'll actually work toward encouraging a newcomer to overbid on a property and basically get them out of the market.
What you said is so true, because the rehabbers that we work with in different parts of the country, friends of mine that do it locally here that are pretty professional and set up for it, and they go to the auctions and they buy, and they said when they started, people would make them in the auction environment, the heat of the moment there, make them overpay for a property. They'd either outbid them or they would bring the price up and then let them have it at the end, knowing that they really have forced them to overpay so they won't be a competitor again, so that their margin is so thin on that property, the economics just don't work, right? I mean, they're really sharks. I mean, land sharks.
The two biggest mistakes we typically see investors make when they're purchasing a foreclosure property are, one, that they overvalue or overpay for the property, and the other is that they underestimate the amount of money it's going to take to repair the property, whether to rent it out or to resell it. And when you're buying a property at one of these auctions, you're doing it largely sight unseen. You may be able to do a drive-by, but for the most part, you're never going to get a chance to analyze the inside of that property. So if you're already coming into it, into this part of your investing career without having that kind of information at your fingertips on your first investment, you're really sort of stacking the deck against yourself. I was just talking to a reporter about a story about a real estate investor in San Francisco who thought they'd made a great, great purchase on a second home, only to find out, much to their dismay, that what they'd actually won at the auction was a second lien. And so now what they were the proud owners of was a second mortgage on a property that the first lien holder was about to foreclose on. So you really need to know what you're doing before you get into these auctions. At the very least, you know, it makes sense to attend a few of these and watch what's going on so you get an idea of who's doing what to whom. But it is really not what we believe is the optimal place for a beginning investor to get involved. And there are so many other foreclosure opportunities right now that represent somewhat safer and equally lucrative buying opportunities, that it really doesn't make any sense to layer on that kind of risk.
I would agree with you there. The only problem is, though, when you work the other side of the market, the pre-foreclosure market, where you've got someone who had an NOD filed against them or whatever that state's version of that is, then you've got a person with no equity who's behind on payments, and then you've got to go work with a lender on a short sale. And anybody who's experienced short sales knows how you can just pull your hair out, pull your teeth out. It's going to be pretty difficult, right?
It's a numbers game, and short sales are not easy. It's something of an oxymoron. It's right up there with, you know, jumbo shrimp and government efficiency.
Right.
So short sales really aren't. And one of the things that we encourage people to do when they're using a site like ours or whatever resources they're using is to do their homework on these properties before they even get started. Look, there are 2.1 million properties on our website right now, about 900,000 REOs and about 1.2 million properties in various stages of foreclosure. If the first one you look at doesn't pan out, go to the next one. You can do one property at a time, and you can spend the next probably 30 years of your life just working through the current database. So just because you missed out on one property or one doesn't meet your criteria doesn't mean there's not multiple opportunities there for you. So, you know, when you're looking at a short sale, make sure you, in this case, stack the deck in your favor. You know, look for properties that aren't significantly underwater. Look for properties that don't have multiple loans outstanding on them. Do what you can to find those kinds of properties. Find properties that are in neighborhoods where home prices have not depreciated as much as some other areas. So, again, the more of these aspects that you take a look at, the more of these things that you do your homework on in advance, and again, we built all these features into the site so people can do it at home in their pajamas, it increases the likelihood of your succeeding. I talked to somebody at a seminar not too long ago who was going crazy, and she said, I just can't get the bank to approve a short sale because the second and third lien holders won't negotiate. And I said, why are you trying to do a short sale on a property with three outstanding loans? Well, I like the house. Well, that's the wrong way to look at it as an investor. What's your investment opportunity? Not do I like that house.
Very good point. It should be just an analytical numbers game when you're an investor. We'll be back in just a minute.
Afraid you could lose your home? It's a real fear for millions of Americans. But there is hope with our do-it-yourself loan modification report. Loan modifications are sponsored by the federal government and can be anything from a reduction of the principal balance to a lowering of the interest rate or an extension of the length of your mortgage. Unfortunately, negotiating a loan modification isn't easy. You'll find step-by-step expert advice in the Do-It-Yourself Loan Modification Report from jasonhartman.com.
Just sort of a general question, Rick. I mean, and this is maybe the $64,000 question. It's a very generic question, but is now a good time to be investing in real estate?
If you have the financial wherewithal right now to be a cash buyer or can get financing, there probably has never been a better time. I say that with one asterisk, which is, again, you probably need to make sure you know where you're buying and what you're going to do with the property once you purchased it. And have a plan to do that. But in terms of value, homes have probably never been more affordable between the combination of home price depreciation and historically low interest rates. There's a growing rental market, so if you're a cash flow investor who's looking to do a buy and hold strategy, or if you're somebody with a fairly decent time horizon on a property, you're not looking to buy it and immediately resell it, you're not going to be as sensitive to home price value fluctuations. If you're renting a property and the home depreciates another 5% over the next year, it's not the end of the world because you're making your money on the rental income anyway. So yeah, it for somebody who knows what they're doing, who has a good plan of attack, probably never been a better time to be a buyer than it is today.
I want to add one more thing to that, and you sort of alluded to it, but I think that investors and home buyers, for that matter, should really right now be looking at what I call the effective cost. And what I mean there is that if they're able to get financing, and even in a market where the price depreciates another 5, even 10%, even 15, maybe 20%. They say that generally speaking, 1% in interest rate equals about 10% in price. And so when you take that incredible mortgage, if you get a fixed rate loan for the next 3 decades, and I don't know what you think, Rick, but I think inflation is coming. It's not here yet, but when it hits, I think it's going to be reasonably severe. And if someone's got 3-decade-long fixed rate mortgages, and every other investor or every potential home buyer that comes after them needs to pay a higher rate to obtain financing. Thank you for listening to the Creating Wealth Show. This is Jason Hartman, your host, and we appreciate you following the show. We have many, many episodes, hundreds of episodes, and some of the older episodes have been archived and placed in our members section, and that applies to this one. So we include a sample that's about 25 minutes long, and then for the rest of the show, you can go to our members section at jasonhartman.com. Many of the other shows are still in their full-length, complete version. However, some of the shows, like this one, are in our members section where you can hear the show in its entirety. And again, you just need to go to jasonhartman.com and you can get the full show there in the members section, plus a whole bunch of other great members benefits and resources, whether it be documents, forms, contracts, articles, other video and audio content, just a great resource. So be sure to join as a member at jasonhartman.com. And thanks again for listening to the Creating Wealth Show.
This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.